acceleration.
Welcome, 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 track and field fans. Pat yourself on the back just by being on this show. You are one of the greatest track and field fans. I'm Tyler.
Third to last. Third to last. We got to meet on Zurich next week.
Hagos G has won it in 12:51.07. Is the top six men have all run 12:51. Faith Kipyegon, they went out on world record pace. They slowed down with 200 meters to go. Three women were right on her shoulder. Would she be vulnerable? No problem. She destroyed everybody in the span of what? We'll talk about that, how she just laid waste to this field. 3:52. Other action. Let's say Tobogo has won an absolutely stacked 100. I think everybody was here, right? Except for Noah Lyles and Kashane Thompson.
Oh, except for the two guys who won two at the Olympics. So, hey, yeah, man, that's kind of a big missing duo.
Well, yesterday's news, those guys. Celebrates early. Really fun race. Ryan Krauser, excellent as usual. He's gone all six throws over 22 meters. I've spent about half the meet to figure out. I have a stat here to tell you how rare that is. And there were some, you know, other interesting races. Kira Nugent, world leader in the women's 100 hurdles. I can't even remember all the races. We'll break it down for you. Plus, we may talk, since it is Friday, we have other things we could talk about. A top NCAA track and field athlete by the name of Parvez Khan, University of Florida, the SEC champion in the mile and the 1500. He has tested positive for EPO. How ramping is doping in NCAA? And will this hurt Parker Valby, her teammate at Florida, as she tries to get a contract? Also, Africa's 38-year domination of the distance events at the World Under 20, a.k.a. World Juniors, has snapped. For the first time in history, a man not born in Africa has won a flat distance event at World Juniors. We'll tell you about Norway's Andreas Field Halvorsen, probably on the show as well. John, thanks for joining us. Yet again, we're not joined by Weldon Johnson. It's official, folks. I told you on Tuesday, he's joined the Silicon Valley elite. His wife has taken a wonderful job there. He has followed her out there, taken the two kids, and I think he's just going to act like a Silicon Valley overlord, John, just sort of manage the computers and maybe someday just let us know we're all fired. I don't know what's going on.
I hope not. I guess we'll see. I'm giving him some leeway here because he's moving 3,000 miles across the country with two young daughters. So I can understand if he's got other things managing right now, but he better be back for that Zurich 1500 next week with Hawker, Nagus, Kerr, and Ingebrigtsen. He better be back for the Diamond League final the week after that. But yeah, we'll hold down the fort tonight. I guess, yeah, I want to go to a comment here from Rose Runner in the chat. And I kind of agree with it. As a distance fan, the 100 meters was the race of the meet. And I know we almost saw a world record in the women's steeplechase, but that 100 was fun as hell. Like, Letzilde Tobogo, I kind of forgot. This guy, he played, I didn't forget how good he is, but he's asked at the Olympics, oh, could you be the next face of the sport? And he's been quite humble and about that sort of thing and saying, no, you know, Noah's the guy. Look what he's done for the sport. But I kind of forgot, this guy's a character as well. Do we remember at World Juniors 2 years ago in Colombia where he just looks over and starts celebrating and like pointing the guy in the next lane with 20 meters to go. I saw this race tonight where he wins in Rome. Just as he's passing Christian Coleman, that's when he starts to celebrate. And Coleman got a great start, had a nice gap on the field. Tobogo was the only one close to him. Tobogo looks over at 20 meters to go, seeing, you know, how close am I to everyone? And as soon as he sees it's Coleman, he's the only one near him, he just starts celebrating because he knows he's going to be holding on better than Coleman. And it was awesome. It was really fun to see. He was, you know, doing a little gesture to the crowd before the race and afterwards. I'm like, this guy's got some personality. Like, he's got some showmanship in him. So it's going to be fun. It's fun having Tobogo with his confidence in the Olympic title. Like, when you win an Olympic gold medal, you roll into these meets, and he just has kept winning. He won twice last week on the circuit as well. His confidence is sky high, but it's going to be really fun to have that guy at the top of the sport for the next, you know, few years, the next Olympic cycle.
Correct. John, by the way, how do I sound? Some people thought you sounded much louder than me.
You sound louder now, so hopefully we're more even.
Okay. By the way, if you're a Supporters Club member, everything will be audioed out in post-production, evened out. I enjoy the 100. I mean, I was just like, wow, like, look at all these names. And just the drama. And, you know, Jacobs is the Italian. By the way, he was terrible at last in the race. But I did think it was – and I love Tobogo's personality. He's just relaxed. First of all, he's won everything. He didn't call it a season. He's kept racing. But he's just, like, got a chill vibe to himself. The celebrations at World Juniors, like, it was, you know, when he was winning the 100 every year, it was like way early. I was kind of like, is he faking this? I feel like everyone now feels like they've got to celebrate early. But yeah, today it was amazing. Like, Coleman, it's kind of like, it's unfortunate it's not an 80 meter race for him. He would be very good at that. But if you just know he's going to get walked down, it's kind of like Fred Curley. It's kind of like Grant Holloway in the last 20 meters of the 110 hurdles. The difference is Coleman's not that far ahead normally. So yeah, he looked over there. I was like, he's celebrating before he's even technically ahead. But one was clearly going in one direction, was going in the other direction. But I did think that Tim Hutchings had this wrong. I don't think that celebration slows you down very much. He's like, oh, definitely would have been a world lead. What's the world lead?
9.79. Yeah,
I don't think
he
so.
He would have gotten that. Because he ran 9.87 tonight to beat Coleman. It was a good run for Coleman, by the way. I mean, credit to him keeping his season going. He didn't make the Olympic team, and then he comes over. And I guess maybe, well, he ran the relay in Paris, but he had a good run, and Curley, who won last week, is 9.95 for third. But the one guy who was missing, so obviously Lyles isn't there, the Olympic champion. Neither is Kashane Thompson. I'm looking at Kashane Thompson. Is it just the injuries again? Because that was his whole thing last year. He only ran one round of the Jamaican Championships because he had these shin injuries. And then his coach, Stephen Francis, says, oh, they found some miracle fix and they go to the injuries fix this year. But he only ran the Jamaican Championships, basically, before the Olympics. He ran that and the one meet, the Guliai Memorial in Hungary. He had a DNF earlier the year where he pulled up lame midway through. But somehow he put together 9.82, 9.84, and 9.77 of the Jamaican champs, and then 10 flat, 9.80, 9.79 of the Olympics. He's run three great rounds in both of the, but outside of those two championships, the Jamaican trials and the Olympics, he's completed 100 meter race this year. So what is it with this guy? Is it just his injuries really are that bad? They keep popping up. It's just very, I don't know. It's kind of weird that you can put it together so well for those two championships and essentially not be available to race the entire rest of the year.
Well, I like the plan that they have because to me, it shows that, I don't know, you might want to risk it in the Olympics or the Jamaican Championships, but you certainly don't want to risk having any injury. I mean, my hamstring still hurts from 20 years ago. So I'm fine with him being extra cautious. You know, whatever. The encouraging thing from him that I saw was, you know, it said that I read in one of these articles, he said, like, oh, I plan on running the 200 in the future. I like the event. So he kind of was like, yeah, was doing a shot at Noah Lyles. I guess that would be good news for Michael Johnson's Grand Slam track league, because if you don't run two events, they don't really have, you know, a place for you. So, you know, that was the men's 100 today. All right, let's talk about distance races and the women's steeple. You know, it was, they said they were going for the meet record, which is like 8:52, but then like they want to go out 2:54. The world record's 8:44, by the way, in case you don't know. Well, eight, I don't actually, I should probably say the hundreds, John, since we were hundreds off.
8:44.32 is the world record by Beatrice Chepkoech.
And she ran 8:44.39. And they said they wanted to go 2:54, and that's what they hit. You know, and that seems, that's not really that fast, because you don't have the water jump on the first lap. So you're actually probably a little bit behind world record pace at that. And then I forgot what 2K was, but it was certainly clear that, that they could run, you know, the world record.
They slowed down. They ran 2:54 for the second K, but they're still, it's still in the ballpark. But then what happened?
Because you're not running that fast. And as long as you don't slow down too much, you're generally, your last lap is pretty good in the steeple. So you're 2/3 of the way. Just don't blow it over the next 600. And you're going to kick it in the last lap. But, you know, with 800 to go, they needed 2:69s. But then on the penultimate, and by the way, so Parith Chimitai, the 2021 Olympic champion, and Yave, the 2024 Olympic champion, are the only two up there. Chimitai is pushing the pace the whole way. And the whole time I was thinking, John, about our Uganda journalist friend, I wish I knew his name, in the mix zone. He was telling us, like, Chimitai wants the world record. She thinks she's in great shape. He was telling us this in Tokyo. We almost told our betting guy, hey, might be worth putting some money down on the world record attempt here. So I was like, okay, she's going for this. And it's also just fun to watch Chimitai race. She, you know, she has no steeple form whatsoever. She just pulls her legs back and hurdles all the hurdles the same, including the water jump. Doesn't even step on the water jump. Like, you know, I think, and, you know, but they slow down a lot in the second lap and run like next penultimate lap and run like a 72. So they need like a 65 flat basically to do it. And, you know, the announcers are kind of like, okay, the,
they're just saying it's done. Like I was like, oh, it's just about the race. And, you know, they're acting as like it wasn't a record attempt at all anymore. And then suddenly the home straight, Chimitai is kind of full, like, well, they're actually together on the final water jump. And then Yavi puts her foot down the last straight and she rips it coming off that final barrier. I mean, she was, I think she might've caught sight of the clock or something and realized how close she was, because she was absolutely going crazy off that last barrier. And missed it by 700ths.
Sorry, John, I wasn't listening. I got a call from the wife. Second day of school pickup. First grade, I was afraid someone forgot to pick up the child. She's picked up the child. I'm not sure what you just said, John. I was worried that my son was...
I just explained the final 200 meters of the race, but I'm glad your son is okay.
What was the final 200 split? Because I was just looking at the time. I'm like, they need to have me, John. It should be official. They should fly to me all these meets, or at least just let me watch it on a live feed, and I can yell to the announcers like, hello, there might be a world record. I mean, some of the times they're just missing the most obvious things. Like if the green light's on world record pace and they're ahead of that, you might want to mention world record. Here I was like, okay, there's only 100 meters to go and she's really sprinting. But her sprint from the final barrier to the finish line was amazing. So she just missed it by 0.07. And, you know, I was like, oh, is she going to be pissed? I think an American might be pissed thinking of all the money they missed out on. But no, look at this. She was celebrating. I got to take off that.
In the moment, she was celebrating, Robert. But then I looked at her quotes afterwards. And if you go to the flash quotes, she actually think she maybe she had a few minutes to think about it and realized that she only missed it by 700ths. But this is what Yavi said. She said, I looked at the time after the race and I went, oh, no, I was really expecting that record and I was going for it. I definitely feel I should break it and I believe it will happen. I need to work even harder and I'm planning to have another go at it before the end of the season. So I think she should be very proud. I mean, obviously when you break the world record, sorry, when you almost break the world record, you're number two all time. It's a fantastic performance. And it was a great run by Chimitai as well. Credit to her, because she was kind of the de facto pacemaker. She holds on and runs 8:48.03. That's a 5-second PB. Just the third woman ever under 8:50. But I was looking at this, you know, if I was Yavi, I'm like, oh, where could I have picked up that extra 10th of a second? And I do feel like on the second to last lap, Chimitai starts slowing down. I think Yavi, I mean, obviously she's tired at that point, but I think she still had a bit of run left in her. And maybe if she takes the lead, then is she's able to push it a little bit from a little bit further out. The other thing was her last barrier of the race, she stutter stepped it quite badly and didn't hurdle it that well. So, you know, that's obviously going to be tough. It's everyone's tired at that point. But those are the 2 points where I look like, oh, maybe if she'd just done that one thing differently. But no, a really, really fantastic run by both of them.
And I don't know enough about the bonuses and the shoe contracts and all that, but I think if they go for it better, particularly in a little bit cooler weather, it was like 80, 81 degrees today, I think they could do it. Now, the steeple's short enough, you're landing in water. I don't think the heat is too much of a factor. I've always said the steeple's kind of the one distance event. It almost doesn't matter what the weather is. It can be windy, it can be cold, it can be hot, and you can still run a pretty good time. But we're talking about world records, so ideal conditions. You know, you would have it a little bit cooler. But I was thinking, you know, I think either one of these women could get it, but Yavi has the perfect, I mean, it's rare that you get a rabbit for like 2,800 meters in a race at world record pace. So they're perfectly suited for this, and she doesn't have a good kick. But I'm like, okay, if I'm Chimitai, you know, they're both Nike athletes, so maybe Nike wants one to beat the other. But if I was Chimitai's agents, I might set it up somewhere else. Like, I would go to Stanford, sound like, get with Jesse Williams, sound running, do it in ideal conditions, and I think she could do it instead of end up serving as an unofficial rabbit. Now, or maybe you work out something with Yavi and say, hey, I'm going to push the pace, but if you get the record, I want 25K or something. Because I do think if they go for it again later in the year, you know, they could do this. And, you know, the comment that John Kellogg had after this race was, you know, we've been wondering, and actually behind them, if you look at the results, it was a pretty good day for the Americans. I mean, remember going into Worlds, Val Constantine, the U.S. champion, was the number three seed in the world. Is that right, John? Or was it number two at 9:03 in the world?
Number three going into the Olympics. She ran 9:04.92. This was her best Diamond League result, her second first time ever. And then sixth place, Gabby Jennings, 9:07.7. More than 4 second PB, sixth place for her. Cordy Wayman was the third American, ninth place, 9:14. Not as great for her. But yeah, Constantine and Jennings, you couldn't see them for most of the race because the top two were running world record pace, but they did equip themselves quite well.
But the point I was trying to make was when it ended, John, you know, we've been wondering, like, is this women's steeple is not that deep an event. So, you know, we put Constantine's medal chances at like 25% and then she ended up getting last in the final. But, and today you're like 9:04, she's not even in the picture, but she is fourth, you know? So it's, you know, if one or two top people bomb or terrible, I could see how she could medal. But I've been wondering, like, is this an event that's going to just go, like, you know, if you're not running 8:55, you don't really have a chance. And that certainly seems to be the case for the win nowadays. But, you know, John Kellogg and I were talking, like, how much lower we think this can go. And we think it can be a lot lower. I mean, John, what is like a 14 flat, 29 flat equivalent to in the steeplechase? Well, he works on that. I guess I should just think about what my top Cornell runners were running. Actually, it wasn't that much faster. They were right around those times, running around 8:40 in the steeple, actually. So, but I think it's faster than this 8. Yeah. So John thinks, you know, like if you're basically a 14 flat, 29 flat guy, you're going to run, which is where the world records are. Now, maybe these runners aren't as good as the flat world record holders. You're going to run around 8:41, which is pretty much, these are almost, this is crazy to think that the top runners I was coaching at Cornell were running somewhere. But these women's barriers are a lot slower, a lot lower, and relatively lower. So 8:35.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to Kip Yegon or Chibet type runner in this event, maybe. Now, obviously those, or someone like Hassan in her prime, those women don't always gravitate to the steeplechase, but yeah, I do think we could be in a world a few years from now where it's sub 8:40. I mean, look at Yavi's only 24. So I think she could get there. Maybe they get the world record in Brussels in a couple of weeks.
All right. Let's talk about the women's, since we're talking women's running, going back to the men's 5,000. Women's 1500, that they hilariously said this was a meet record attempt, and the meet record's like, Kip Yegon set the world record in this meet last year, 3:49.1 something.
Now it's 3:49.04 is the world record. But yeah.
So it would suck if they actually got the meet record, but not the world record. And, you know, historically she's kind of gone out in like 2:04. And they actually, the rabbit did hit 204, but it was not done correctly. It was like 59.9.
59.97, then 64, like one. So yeah.
Now, when I was watching this live, I was defending, I think it was Winnie Yanyoni that was rabbiting.
Winnie Nanyondo of Uganda, yes.
And when I watched the first 100, I was kind of defending her because I was like, all the women went out so hard. She was way ahead of even the blue lights, which is ahead of the pacing lights. And I'm like, what else is she supposed to do? Like, these women should back off and let kind of just, okay, we're going for the world record. Let's just let, you know, we'll let the rabbit get up there. We'll let Faith get in second. We'll let Jessica Hall and the Ethiopians get in third, fourth, and fifth. Instead, everybody pushed up. And the rabbit and Faith was way out there and kind of, I mean, and Hall were like running around extra distance on the turn. But I then watched it three more times on tape delay because I was like, I'm not going to criticize her because normally I rate like basically 60, 64. I watched it again though, and she was inexperienced. So like, has she rabbited before? This is what Tim Hutchings was talking about. Yeah, she was ahead of the light the first 100, but then she kind of still got the field by like 3 or 4 meters in the turn. She should have just slowed it down. Now, John's like, when you go out for super hard the first 100, you don't want to just slam on the brakes. And it's kind of hard. That's the problem with these things is, like, you know, if the first 200 is too fast and then you slow it down, it's hard to get back in the right rhythm. But that's where the lights help. But I really think they should have, like, if I was this meet director, I would just be, like, screaming at the girls at the start. Like, everybody, let's let them go. And it would have been interesting to me. The rabbit and Kipyegon were on the outside, and we've seen that in the past at the Diamond Leagues. But when Jakob ran recently, one of the Diamond Leagues this year, he was in lane one, and I'm like, wow, is he going to get just boxed in? But everyone just let him have it go. He ran right up lane one. Nobody got in his way because it was kind of understood, like, look, if we get in his way, we're screwed. We need him up there to push the pace when the rabbit stops. So I do think that the pacing was off, but it was kind of interesting to me to see, okay, like maybe she can run way faster if she goes out hard, but she was off of it sort of at 800. They were 204, then they ran another 64, and you know, 300 meters to go, Hull's right there, two or three Ethiopians are right there, and I say to John Kellogg, I'm like, Kipyegon's gonna blast her, right? But you could tell Hull was thinking, okay, I'm gonna try to take her down. And 200 meters to go, like, I thought, well, maybe, you know, the only way Kipyegon's going to be beat if she really fades or if there's something off. And then 200 meters to go, she looked full of run. And I don't know when it was, around about 150, 140 meters to go, it was like somebody hit turbo, John. Like, they switched the camera angle, and she's got like a 20-meter lead. It was amazing. The gap that she put on this field between 150 and 80 meters was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this is why she's the GOAT. She closed in 29.2. Maybe could have been faster if she was pushed, but yeah, you usually a race that close with 200 meters to go, you don't end up winning by more than a full second, which is what Kipyegon did. She won in 3:52.89 for Wayne Hailu. The world indoor champ was second in 3:54.16. And Buck Ahilom, who totally bombed at the Olympics, beats out Jesse, like didn't even make the semifinals, right? She beats Jessica Hall and gets third in 3:54.79.
No, she made the semis in the repechage round, John. Remember?
Oh, through the repechage, but she didn't make the. I mean, she didn't make the final.
No,
she beat Jessica Hall, the silver medalist at the Olympics, 3:54.79 to 3:54.98. But yeah, Kipyegon, she hasn't lost a 1500 since June 2021, and I was looking at, I'm like, 300 to go, I'm like, all right, I mean, they are still there, but this is why she's so good, is she can win any style of race. She can win by hammering it from the front, she can win by going out fast, then backing off, and then attacking again. She can win in a slow tactical race. She's just got the full toolkit. This is why she's the greatest miler in women's history by far. And this one, you know, 3:52, by her standards, that's not even that fast these days, 3:52.89, because she's able to hammer that last 200. But yeah, another win for Faith Kipyegon, just stack it on the pile of victories she's registered this distance.
By the way, I mean, I told Ethiopia to put Frey Wainihailu on the team, right? That was the one I read about, right, John?
I don't know, Robert. You got to tell me your own opinions.
You win World Indoors. You finish first or second. I mean, let's look at Fryhorn and Hailu's results this year. This is the woman that won World Indoors. She did not compete in the Olympics. So she wins World Indoors. I guess maybe they were upset that she's finished fourth in 2021, fourth in 2022. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't put on the team because her season's best was not among the top three. Sagai wanted to triple, and there were also some reports that there was some conflict, I think, between her camp and Sagai's camp. And that was one of the reasons she was left off the team. But if you look at her results, she had a bad opener in Xiamen, which was only about 6 or 7 weeks after she won World Indoors. She was 358 first Doha, second in LA Grand Prix, 355, first in Big Gosh, 358. And then since the Olympics, second in Salace here on Sunday, 357, and now second in Rome, 354.
Yeah, I mean, basically, every single race she's run this year except for one, she's been first or second, and that's counting World Indoors, that's counting 1, 2, 3, 4 Diamond Leagues. Now, only two of those Diamond Leagues were beforehand. And just because, so basically she doesn't make the Olympic team because she bombed a race on April 20th. It just shows you how dumb the Ethiopian selection pressure is. Now, maybe she wouldn't have medaled because, you know, Derebi Wilteji, who was silver last year, ended up fourth this year, was very competitive. I do think sort of the Ethiopians just aren't good at like running really tactical races and just saving energy and kicking at the end and trying to get second or third. I do think these runners that are sort of used to the NCAA system are better at that. But just the Ethiopia, like, you've got to have a trials or let me coach these women, one or the other. Anyways, that was the women's 1500. There was, John, I don't know if you noticed this. It's just, you know, it's nowadays you run 356, 358, and you're not even relevant, really. It's kind of crazy. But there were a couple 359s that got my attention. Nadia Bataklety, the 10,000 meter silver medalist, right, John?
Yes.
This shows you know, how talented these runners are, how good they are. I mean, I guess some people are suspicious because her father did test positive for drugs at one point in his career, and he's her coach. But, you know, you're a 10,000 meter runner, and she breaks 3:59. Now, we've seen, you know, obviously, you know, Safwan Hassan and Litson that can close a 10,000 in 3:59. But I'm just talking about the Americans that, you know, want to be competitive in the 5 and the 10, you know, in the years to come, Parker Valby, et cetera. You need to be able to break 4 for 1,500 meters.
Elise Cranny won the U.S. title last year in the 10,000 and it ran 3:57 this year. I mean, I'm looking at Bataklety. I'm like, I kind of thought she might run even faster than this, given that she was fourth in the 5K and second in the 10K and was closing like a maniac in both of those races. I would have thought maybe she could run even a little faster than 3:59, but it is crazy how, you know, we have some good athletes competing right now. Sure. Like I said, Kipyegon's the GOAT, but also shoes have just subtracted 3 seconds or something from everyone's time in this race. Cause I'm watching this race and midway through Bataklety was like in last or second to last. I'm like, what the hell is she doing back there? Is she just totally bombing? It's like, no, the lead women went out in sub 60. So it's just a really fast pace, and she did get smoked by a lot of the 1500 specialists, but 3:59, I wouldn't look at it and say like that was a terrible run or anything. It's just like 3:59 will get you 11th in a Diamond League in the year 2024 and 6 seconds behind the win. That's where the event is at.
Yep. Someone in the chat wants to know where all the Americans were. They shut their season down. I mean, you know, it's disappointing. We're not seeing like a Sinclair Johnson who hasn't raced since finishing fourth in the trial. I mean, Sinclair Johnson, let's not forget, it's not like she ran bad at the trials. 3:56.75. If I was Pete Julian, the coach, I'd certainly want her to keep racing so I could try to keep my job. But one thing to consider here is it may not be easy to get into these races. I mean, I was kind of mad when the rabbits went out so far. That maybe they had too many people. I mean, they have 15 people. How many more people do you want them to put in the 1500? So, you know, and when you look at this field, you've got, you know, a lot of very fast women. You've got two Italians that haven't broken four, but before today, but you know, I mean, I guess maybe she could have been over, and there's one or two people who she's run faster than this year. I mean, Sarah Healy of Ireland's run 3:57. So, you know, Vissa, I mean, maybe she could have gotten this race if she wanted to, but it also might be hard to be motivated. I think you should do it to be training, but not know what you're going to get into. I guess you could always run Fifth Avenue Mile if you can't get into these races. But if you're not on the Diamond League circuit, there's really no other meets that really, I guess you could run, as a woman, you could run mixed gender races with guys and college kids and stuff, try to get your time down to do time trials. Because otherwise, if you're on some B-level meet, that's not going to cut it for you. You know, you need a race at 3:55 or faster to really motivate you to do better. So, you know, that was the women's 1500. Men's 5000, they go out hard. They were really hyping up the world record. I actually think it's better when they don't hype up the world record and you get the world record than when you hype it up and don't get it. And 5000 is a long time. And when I saw the weather, you said it was 80 degrees. I looked at my weather app, said 81. That seems hot to me. Now, I did look up the weather when Cheptegei set his world record, and I thought it was too hot then. The whole week, I was like, it's going to be too hot. 79 degrees when Cheptegei did it. And it was like a 68 dew point, and today was a 66 dew point, or maybe I have it backwards. It's a little pretty similar, a little bit hotter today. But to me, that's too hot. I know Cheptegei got the world record, but I would really like to see 55 to 60 degrees. So I saw these guys up there, but they weren't ahead of the lights. I'm like, who's going to push? The rabbits seem to be struggling to get to 3K. I'm like, who's going to push this? This is going to slow down. And it did slow down a lot in the middle, but it kind of made an interesting race. I mean, top six guys all ran, you know, 12:51, but Hago's Gebrehiwot, what jumped the field kind of with 200 meters to go and nobody came back on him, right? Yeah. Is that how you describe it for people who didn't see it?
Yeah, basically he made a nice pass of Kijelcha to get the inside line right before the turn and closed the best of everyone. I mean, he's known for closing really fast and super fast races, and I wouldn't call this race super fast, but I think maybe he had an advantage over guys like Kijelcha and Aragawi especially. He didn't run last week in Slesia, and Aragawi, I was like, oh, he just ran 7:21 on Sunday? He might be in world record shape right now, but I think the dude was tired because we've seen Aragawi hammer the middle parts of races before, and when he took the lead, he just really didn't have any gas in the tank today, and it slowed. Yeah, you know, he got past and it just slowed way down on that third on that fourth kilometer. So I got to think that probably helped Gebrewet a little bit, but yeah, no one, you need someone in a world record attempt like this, you need someone to push the fourth kilometer and not really care about whether they get the win or not, just, you know, have to be willing to possibly sacrifice themselves. We've seen Kijelcha do that in the past. He wasn't willing or able to do it today. But when I look at why this world record attempt fizzled, I think it's two things. I think it's the weather, like you said, Robert. It was hot and humid, even though this was after 10 p.m. local time in Rome. And also you didn't have that, you know, the pacer only lost about 2K and you didn't have anyone pushing it after that.
Got the results up on the screen. I mean, the course was pretty good. John Kellogg talking about, you know, 25.7 for Gebrehiwot. Actually, the fastest close of the day was Borrega, 25.5. Now, loyal listeners have been wondering, was I going to retire? Is this good news or bad news for Grant Fisher? This is bad news. I watch a race like this. Grant Fisher, he gets last in the last Diamond League meet. And I see these guys run 7:21. I see them run 12:51 with a 25-second close. And I'm just like, my God, how did he beat those guys in the Olympics? Like, how in the world did he? The biggest close today was Borrega. He had 25.5. He only finished in third. The guy's got a monster kick. He's the 2021 Olympic 10,000 meter champion. And somehow Grant Fisher has two Olympic medals in 2024, and Borrega only has one. Now, I think Borrega was only in one event, right, John?
Well, Borrega didn't medal in the 10K, but he has the gold from 2021. How did he beat them? Grunfish has one bad race, like one bad race in the last 2 years. I guess he was injured in 2023, but that was like his one bad race since USA's in 2023. And now you're saying, oh, how did he possibly beat these guys? because one, he timed his peak really well, and two, he's very close to these guys when he's at his best.
I know that.
At his best in Silesia.
I'm just saying, though, I think on their best days, they're better than he is. And I think there's five or six guys in the world that are better than him on his best day. And yet he's got two medals because he's.
Gebre and Kijelcha can't time that championship, that peaks right. They've, based on that, either they're not great championship runners, which Gebre used to be, he used to medal, or they get their peaks horribly wrong. Those two guys.
I disagree. I've got to push back. I've got to push back against that here. First of all, to me, Gebre, he what? And Grant Fisher fans, don't get mad at me. He didn't run a bad race in the Olympics. He ran for the goddamn gold medal, and he went for the gold. It would have made Steve Prefontaine proud. He ran a big race. He threw a huge kick out there, and he got run down and lost the bronze because of it. I think if he runs for a medal like Fisher, he gets the medal ahead of Grant. So okay. I don't want to say that Grant doesn't deserve a medal. I don't think he got his peak that wrong this year. So no, it's hard, so harder because Ethiopians put these trials way out. I think they put it too far out. If I was them, I'd run the trials on the last possible day. If you're not going to have any doubling, just okay, pick the 10 or the 5. What are you doing? These guys get in shape too early. But no, Grant's smarter. Like, he doesn't waste energy. He was right on the rail. He was in third. He didn't do any surging. These other guys tired themselves out. And when it came time to kick, look, when you have six guys running the same goddamn time today, the top six guys ran 12:51. Small things over 25 laps, not surging, not leading, not doing anything, just sitting on the rail, letting everybody else do the work, you outkick them, and he deserved it. So that's why he got the 10,000-meter medal. The Ethiopians, and it's easy now to criticize them for the team tactics. At the time, I don't think we're criticizing them. For 10 effing years when Mo Farah was just gifted all these championships, we're like, why don't they use team tactics? Why don't they push the pace? Because it's hard to push the pace. Now, I don't like that pushing the pace with three guys. I would just do one guy, just sacrifice himself. But the problem is one guy pushing himself probably is only going to make it 6K and it's not far enough. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I think Fisher ran a really smart race, and there's very little separating these guys, right, John? I mean, we see Cheptegei in LA get smoked by these guys. They're all very, very similar. This isn't 1996 where Coleman and Gebre Selassie are just way better than everybody else.
Right. That's exactly the point I'm trying to say. Fisher is right in there with all these guys. They're all at a very similar level. And guess what? 2021, 2022, Fisher was in the medal hunt and didn't get a medal. This year, he goes in there, makes a couple tweaks to his setup, trains a bit more at altitude, changes his training just a little bit, and he gets the medal. It's not like he's a drastically different runner than he was a few years ago, but you throw in enough times and something's going to stick at some point. And I think that kind of supports your point that, yeah, they're all pretty similar. This time, this was Fisher's year.
Now, it was kind of interesting. Like at 4K, Mo Ahmed, who ended up seventh in this race, 12:54, you know, he's 10:23. I was thinking he got, no, I guess I should go back to 3K when this race. They were 7:37 up front, and Mo Ahmed was 7:44. He's 7 seconds back, you know, and then he catches up to the field, but didn't have, you know, much at the kick. But it would have been interesting to me, you know, if Jakob had been in this pace, in this race, does he go out with them? Or does he do it that one time when he ran one that Diamond League a couple years ago in the 12:40s? Does he just sit in the pack and think, they're not going to do this, I'll let them come back to me, then I'll just blast them at the end?
It depends. Is he running for the world record? Is he running for the win? If he's running for the world record, he goes out hard. If he's running for the win, he does what he did in Florence 3 years ago.
Now, this is the type of race, a hot race where they're pushing the pace, that I think would be bad for Jakob if he actually went out hard. I think this is the one type of race he might struggle in, being a bigger European runner. But I know, I mean, how tall is Kijelcha, do we know?
I don't know. I mean, he's tall, but he's skinnier. Robert, you're forgetting Jakob destroying everyone in the 2022 Worlds when it's like 80 degrees and sunny in Eugene. That you just ignore that race for some reason.
You ignore the time of that race, John. Will you remind me what the time of the 2022 World Championships
was? I don't care what the time was. It was a championship. It was hard. You're just saying this is the kind of race he would struggle in.
I'm the biggest Jakob fan in the world. I just don't think, you seem to think he can, you know, win the 60 hurdles, the 60 meter dash, the marathon, you think he can go out and run UTMB in a 100 degree day and have no problem with it?
It was hot. It was warm, sunny, middle of the afternoon in Silesia, Robert, and he ran 7:17. I don't think the heat bothers him as much as you think.
Okay. 3,000 is not the same as a 5,000. I'm looking for vulnerable points. I don't want my boy to ever lose, and I just want to make sure he avoids these races.
Boy. I don't pick play favorites. He's
your I said my boy.
Okay.
John's one of the, you know, he's one of these journalists that on MSNBC that thinks that they play it straight. Yeah, I don't have favorites. Morning Joe has no favorites. He's totally best. Okay, in case I'm just looking up the time here, 2022 World Championship 5,000 meters. I think it was a 13:40 race.
It wasn't 13:40. Wait. Off the top of my head, winning time.
No, I apologize.
It was like 13:13, right?
13:09. I apologize to Jakob. Okay, John wins. Robert looks like a fool. So that was the 5,000. And then what else did I want to talk about? I was obsessed with the shot put. I saw Krauser had 6 throws over 22 meters. I'm like, how often does that happen? This is the 6th time in his career that he's done it. He first did it in 2020. And only three human beings have ever done this. Some Italian did it in 1987 when I think he had the world record. I'd be very suspicious of that. And then Joe Kovacs did it earlier this year at Prefontaine Classic. So rest of the world 2, Krauser 6. Just super impressive how consistent he is. I think he won with the 22:49 meet record. He's just amazing. Like, I was looking at the beginning of his career, like when he won 2016, you know, Olympics, we forget how much better he is now than when he was sort of like an NCAA athlete. Like in 2016, John, when he was kind of coming into his own, like, I'm looking up his PB that year.
Well, he set the Olympic record in 2016. It's not like he was bad. He went from Olympic champion level to greatest of all time level.
Yeah, but I guess a 22-meter throw used to be extremely rare. Like, only 38 humans have ever done it. And he the fact that he just does it all the time, we still take it for granted. Like, a lot of these guys have to have a good year. They'll do it one year, not the next. But, yeah, 2016, yeah, he did throw 22:52 to win the Olympics. But, you know, his PB coming into that year was only 21:39. So he had that monster year, and then basically every year since then, he's thrown 22 or 23 meters. So congrats to Mr. Shotput. Tara Davis Woodhull also won the long jump. She's Olympic champion, but this is her first Diamond League meet, et cetera. So anyways, if you're just joining us, we're recounting the Rome Diamond League. As you probably know, this is a special edition of the Let's Run.com Track Talk podcast. Normally, our Friday podcast is for our supporters club. Join the supporters club today. Folks, you'll get an I Am the Pacemaker t-shirt if that's what you want. You can also get a Let's Run t-shirt. These are Let's Run's exclusives. I'm not going to put them for sale. So just join the supporters club. Enter the code GOAT50, new subscribers. You'll get it for free. It'll cost you $50 to the supporters club. Actually, I'll let you buy it if you want to buy it. If you want to pay it $50 straight up, you can go to shop.letsrun.com, buy it for $50. Supporters club members, look, you get it at cost. These are high quality, $20 each. Go to shop.letsrun.com, enter the code Jakob, J-A-K-O-B. You have to be a supporters club member. Please, on the notes section, put in your supporters club member. I don't want people trying to cheat the system. John, I've got a lot of orders. I'm like, are these really all supporters club members? I'm going to have to verify this. That's fraud. I could have them prosecuted, right?
I don't know. So, I don't know about that, but it's good that we're getting orders for your shirt, right, Robert? Also,
yeah, by the way, I'm gonna have a new mock-up of the shirt. I didn't like the guy messed up the mock-up, so like check over the weekend. I haven't even put it out yet. I've only announced it on the podcast, and I had like a bunch of orders.
Robert,
so anyways,
while we're doing the podcast, I've pulled up a Peacock stream. The World Juniors right now is going on. They've got 200 meters to go in the women's 800 meter final. Sarah Marah, who is cousin of Mary Marah, is leading over Australia.
Cousin.
Claudia Hollinsworth. I was told it was sister at the trial.
Yeah.
Now it's cousin. I don't know. I've seen cousin a lot of places recently. Sophia Guerrero of Harvard, though, is in third place. She's going for the bronze medal here with 100 to go. So, it's getting exciting. She's right there for the win, man. She can get the silver.
Who's she? You're not referring to
Guerrero. Sorry, the American. Okay, Sarah Morrell got the win. Claudia Hollingsworth second, but Alex Gibby's big year continues. Got a world junior bronze medalist, Sofia Guerrero of the United States in the 800 meters.
This is the meet, by the way, that we were going to skip because Max Siegel said it was unsafe or something, made up some excuse. And I'm kind of upset. Like, we didn't enter, they said the time of the year. So we didn't enter any distance runners. I guess the college coaches don't want to let their runners run the 3000 because it might mess up their cross country season. I guess I could kind of see
lame. Like, you know, it's going to be, most of these people on this team aren't going to be competing for the NCAA title this fall. If you're not letting him run, this might be their only chance to represent the U.S. I feel like that's kind of lame if college coaches are blocking him.
I kind of agree. Now, this is amazing. Someone on this podcast may have started a thread under an anonymous name. Thread titled poster under the name of Where's the U.S. Pride? Says USA does it again. US forfeits mixed gender 4x4s at World Juniors.
They didn't forfeit.
Okay, I'll admit it, John. I wrote this.
You know what happened, Robert?
I'm reading this. The pro stars ignore the mixed gender event. That pisses me off. But why don't we enter a team at World Juniors? This is pathetic. The first post, I'm going to check this out to see if this is a lie. The first post says, I'm an athlete. I'm a coach with an athlete on the under 20 roster. I'm not there myself. Oh, so I can't look it up. Apparently the athletes were taken to the track, warmed up, put their spikes on with every intention of running. A team was set plus alternates. Then 10 minutes before call time, the staff came and told them they weren't actually ever entered in the mixed relay. Not making this up. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Now I know John won't put this on Max Siegel. He'll say this is beneath him to actually figure this out, but that's just so embarrassing. That's so that's true. It's so pathetic. I'm gonna actually look up to see where this coach. Wow. I can't reveal where this IP address is coming, John, because it's from a very random state. Do we have anyone on the 4x4 team from a very random state?
Robert, I don't want you speculating about people's IP addresses or whatever, but no, it's inexcusable for the U.S. not to enter a team. What the word on the message board was that they didn't meet the entry deadline and were scrambling to try to enter a team. And that's why they wanted to have them warm up to see if they could get, you know, World Athletics to listen to them. And they didn't do it. Like, that's whoever, all these administrators and stuff, this is one of your jobs is, or the coaches that are selected for these national teams, your job is to enter the team and they didn't do it. That's pretty absurd to me that the U.S. didn't have a team. They would have been favored for one of the medals, I assume. So that's unfortunate. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, that women's 800 at World Juniors, this is why I love World Juniors, is because the Ethiopian girl who was in, I think, lane one or lane two, when you hit the break, instead of just staying on the rail and running the shortest distance, she starts drifting to the outside and trying to pass everyone. Meanwhile, everyone else, no one's crashing in. The whole lane one is just wide open. I'm just like, oh my God, this is just tactical. It's ridiculous, but at the same time it's what makes this meet fascinating, because you'll see tactical errors that you really wouldn't see at the professional level in any of these races. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. That we still got a couple fun finals to come. Cam Myers in the 1500 tomorrow, that should be a good one.
So there you, folks, if you're watching live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you can see the picture now. I am the pacemaker t-shirt. It's got front and back. It's got the hem tag. On the back, it says, John, what's the name of the song?
Ingen Björt. Or sorry, I should have memorized it by now. Nobody does it better. Ingen den Björt. I need to look that up.
Anyways, go to shop.letsrun.com if you want the shirt. Go to letsrun.com, subscribe, and join the
Ingen Gjort Det Betra. Okay, there we go.
You know, I love the World Juniors and the high school races because people don't know how to race yet. It's more entertaining. I do want to hand a shout out, though, to, I normally criticize Max Siegel for the lack of, he doesn't seem to care about track and field. He's not really a fan of the sport, I don't believe. It's more into race car racing. But you know, not entering these teams and whatever, but he is preparing the relay teams for 2028. We were very upset when they didn't originally enter World Juniors because we're like, supposed to have a home Olympics. These could be some of the stars. How can they got to get experience. And it was thrilling to see the men's, like, we can't expect the U.S. men to drop the baton in the 4x100 meters in 2028 unless they practice that in 2024. So I'm pleased to report we have botched the handoff yet again today, and U.S. will not be participating in the men's 4x100 final.
Well, unlike you, I don't want to basically mock a bunch of teenage athletes competing for the U.S. It's unfortunate this happened, but you know, there. Carl Lewis was commenting about this. He's like, "Look, I don't blame the athletes. I blame you. You got to place some blame on the coaches as well." But yeah, it's unfortunate for the U.S. The very first handoff as well. It's like in the Olympics. It was kind of, the parallels are kind of amazing because that's the handoff they botched both times. All right, Robert. Anything else? Do we want to talk Parvez Khan before we?
Yes. So real quick before we leave, I mean, it was the Roman Diamond League show, but. Two other stories. One, at World Juniors last night, Norway's Andreas Feld Halvorsen won the men's 3,000 meters. He's a 747 athlete. I think he turns 19 in 2 days, in 2 weeks. And, you know, this seemed surprising. Like, Jakob Ingebrigtsen never won World Junior gold. And, you know, the message board is like, how come when a Norwegian wins, you make a big deal of it? I was like, because it's historic, people. And I thought to myself, when's the last time someone not born in Africa won a men's gold medal at World Juniors? And I went to 2022 Worlds and 2021 and 18 and 16 and 14 and 12 and none. I went all the way back 38 years. Only one non-African-born man has ever won in World Under 20 gold in a distance race. And that was in the very first World Juniors in 1986. Spain's somebody, some guy from Spain won the now discontinued men's 2,000 meter steeplechase. Since then, it was 73 straight for Africa. And that changed with this Norwegian win. So I think it's historic. And we saw something similar at the world's level. There were 64 straight African-born men winning senior level golds at Worlds, at the World Championships. Now, I know in the Olympics there was a few in between, like Centerwitz and stuff like that. And now this is starting to change. Like, the Norwegian guy wins the 3,000. We might have an Australian win the 1,500. And the question is why? So I think that there's two interesting theories, or three, really. One, I do think that there was a lot of age cheating in the past. It's much, you know, people in Africa didn't used to have birth certificates. They could look the other way, whatever. I think that the AIU is cutting down on that more. So I think there's probably less age cheating now than in the past. Two, drug testing. I mean, I do think that's a factor. We've seen a lot of positive tests from Kenya and stuff like that. And then, John, you had this third reason, and I think this is probably most prominent this year. They got rid of the 10,000 at World Juniors. So now they have a 5,000 and a 3,000, which are very similar events. And I'm not sure why they're not doubling these athletes. The best 5,000 guy doesn't also run the 3,000, but like Kenya had two 1305 guys in the 5,000. And then the two guys in the 3,000 were 1356, 1357 athletes. So I think that the field has been watered down a little bit. It seemed that like the field in the 5,000 was a much higher quality field, but this Norwegian kid is quite talented. I mean, he was the number one seed. It wasn't that big of a shock. He's run 747. Which is certainly better than 1356, even if that's now an altitude, that's pretty impressive for a Kenyan. But congrats to him. You know, he's a good runner, and I think it's interesting. We've seen the African domination sort of fade significantly in the men's 1500 and men's 5000 with Jakob. Could this be more of a trend moving forward? We'll have to see. But definitely, you know, someone gets mad at me for pointing out something that breaks a 38-year streak. I think it's fascinating. Glad we did the research on it.
Yeah. Now, those events, that's from the 1500 through the 10K, or now it's from the 1500 through the 5K, including the steeple. I do think it was a good stat you came up with, Robert, and it's noteworthy. And I do think the reasons you bandied about are, you know, generally, I think those are sort of the factors. You've got some great athletes from, like, sometimes it's just a freak athlete. Like, if Niels Lauritz was in this meet, he'd be the heavy favorite to win the 1500 meters. And he's from the Netherlands, which doesn't have a history of, like, dominant Dutch-born, you know, 1500 guys. But now they've got two with him and Nielsen. So he's like, you've got to remember
that's the other thing.
At this meet, Robert. Yeah, Biniam Mahari, the 17-year-old Ethiopian who was sixth in the Olympic 5K final, has run 7:33 this year. He's not running this meet. And Ethiopia had two other 7:30-something guys who didn't run in this meet. And is that related to the age cheating thing? I don't know for sure, but they're officially their ages, they're eligible, and they did not compete. So that's another thing. But like you said, this Norwegian guy, Halvorsen, he ran fantastic. 7:47 at age 17. That's really, really good. So
yeah, but
definitely a big win for him.
Yeah, I forgot about the other options. There's really four options. Just a lot of the top talent's not here. I mean, I forgot Niels Lauritz is 19. He could have run this meet. He doesn't turn 20 until April. So he could have won. Mahari's a 26:30 something guy, right? 26:40. I mean, he could have wiped the four of these guys, even probably in the 3000. So yeah, I guess it probably deserves an asterisk because if they all show up, he's probably fifth.
Yeah, but do the best talents always show up every year at World Juniors? I mean, yeah, this can't be.
Well, that's the thing.
Didn't show up.
But you know, and the other thing that doesn't make sense is we're assuming it's age champ cheating. I do think maybe the Africans just mature at an earlier age than the Americans, but because, you know, people say, oh, there's no way that Cheptegei could have run that 28-minute 10K when he was 15 or whatever it was, or there's no way Haile Gebrselassie was that good at that age, or Eliud Kipchoge. Well, if Eliud Kipchoge wasn't, you know, when did Paris Worlds 2003, how old was he supposedly? 18? Yeah. 17? Well, he's still running like two or three marathons 21 years later. So which is it? Is he running a 202 marathon at age 45 or was he overage back then? So, you know, it's just people do develop it at different ages, you know, et cetera. But a lot of times, I mean, historically, particularly on the men's side, you know, the giant talents, Usain Bolt was a dominant figure at World Juniors, you know, Borrega's won this meet. Like a lot of these guys are stars at this stage and then move on afterwards. All right. We're going to probably be over an hour now on the live show, and we cut off the silence bill a little bit less. One last thing. Parvez Khan, this is another devastating blow for Jonathan Gull. This one, you know, John says he doesn't have favorites. This was one of John's favorite runners. I was at these meets. He loved this guy. He put his necklace in his mouth and he'd always kick from way far behind. We'd never seen a distance runner really from India run in the NCAA level. This guy was SEC champion in the miles, a freshman, SEC champion in the 1500, big kick. Didn't, you know, he made the final indoors in the mile, didn't make it outdoors in the 1500, but was kind of an exciting guy. India's got so many people that, you know, he could have been kind of a big star, even if he's just an also ran at the world level. And he's tested positive for EPO at the Indian National Championships. Huge message board thread on this. You know, probably 10 pages, up to 10 pages now. It was 8 when we started the show. People are talking about this. There's a lot of jealous coaches. So a lot of people, obviously, I always say any thread that involves a U.S. college coach, there's a lot of people coaching at lower level D2, D3, lower level D1s that would love to have the jobs. And they don't, yeah, to rise to the top of the D1 level, you kind of have to be a salesman. There's kind of a used car aspect to some of it. Because people are jealous and people are just like slamming the Florida coach now saying, Will Palmer's a doping coach. We don't know that. That's absurd. I really don't think that. But by the way, there was an ex-Alabama runner where he was coaching before that has tested positive for EPO, but she was there like 5 years ago. So I don't know if he was actually there then. But I don't know. Like, I hadn't thought of a bigger. A lot of people are trying to make this bigger and say, what does this impact Parker Valby? Now, Parker Valby's on the college team. She has the same coach. But do I think there's systematic doping and the Florida distance team? No, that was not the thing that jumped to my mind at all. To me, the much more obvious explanation to this, I mean, people fairly are asking, like, if you're a shoe exec, would this make you a little bit more hesitant to give Parker Valby a ton of money? Yes or no? And it wouldn't me, because I would put like either performance stipulations in there or drug testing stipulations in there or whatever. But to me, the more obvious, John, explanation to this is simple. Like if I was a college coach and somebody approached me from India now, I would just assume they're doping. I really would. And it would be just be like no different than what I would have thought if a Russian woman wanted to run for me 10 years ago. I would assume almost 100% of the Russians are doping. And people say, how dare you, Rojo? That's racist. We had an article out. There was an article this year, like the drug testers showed up at some Indian meet and like people were jumping over the fence. Didn't like 7 of the 8 guys just abandon the 100 meter final, John? Like it was wild, like what happened. So there's a lot of pharmaceuticals in India. It's not regulated like in America. It's very easy to get drugs. And I think it's just much more likely that someone's like, he ruined his life on the message board. I'm like, he didn't ruin his life. I don't know his personal status in Ethiopia. I mean, in India, but I doubt he had like, there's a lot of people struggling to get by in Ethiopia. He almost doped his way to a India. Yeah. He almost got away. If he pulls this off and dopes his whole career and gets his biological passport with a high hemocrat value, because he's been doping his whole life, he could make hundreds of thousands of dollars for the next 15 years. He almost basically, assuming he's guilty, he almost stole probably several million dollars away from shoe companies. I don't know if stole is the right word, but from other athletes. So like, there's a huge incentive to do it when you're from these poor countries. Now, I do want to say one thing. We've had a lot of EPO positives turn to negative, prominent cases. Bernard Lagat, who ended up being an American record holder. Peter Bull from Australia.
We haven't had a lot. That's two in the last 25 years, but...
Well, that's too many for me. So
he was provisionally suspended off the testing policy.
I should have started with that.
Yeah, provisionally suspended. He still actually hasn't shown up on the National Anti-Doping Agency's list of banned athletes because they haven't updated it since July 1st. But if you look at his Instagram, he's basically deleted all his posts. So something appears to be up. We'll see how this thing unfolds. I would like to hear... this is very rare with anyone who gets caught with drugs. I would like to hear how he's 19 years old. How did he come about this? But I think you're right, Robert, to point at that India has a major doping problem at the moment. And the other thing is the NCAA, the top athletes aren't tested very much. So you know, someone might be saying, well, how could he take EPO and be using it the whole year? One, we don't know he was using it the whole year. But two, I could very easily see...
He took it for the. You think he took it for the
NCAAs? If I had to guess, I would say he's been using it for a while. But you know, it's very possible you're one of the top runners in the NCAA. He didn't even make the final at NCAA outdoors. He just might not have been tested at all while he was at Florida. So I think that was one of the common reactions I saw on Twitter from some of my followers, is just people like, NCAA needs to test more. And yes, I think it would be good if they do, because it's producing so many of the world's best athletes year after year. The funding's got to come from somewhere, though. So, and there's got to be a willingness on the behalf of the NCAA and, you know, its coaches to start doing that.
So if you're listening, if you're watching the live show, I'm going to put in the chat a link to an NPR article about how all the runners ran away from the drug testers. It's from NPR, a very reputable source. But yeah, no, I agree. I've always wondered from the drug testing if there could be a liability issue for like the NFL. I don't think they really try to test people. And they do test a little bit and you get suspended for 4 games. But like people could argue, hey, these people are roided up. They're injuring me more because they're on steroids. But yeah, it's expensive to drug test. You know, basically, people want to know, like, I don't know how many athletes in 10 years were tested at mine at Cornell. I remember when Weldon was in college, they would kind of randomly pick like 2 or 3 athletes a year on the track team and pick. And one girl was on marijuana and people were like, she took some concoction to try to flush it out of her system. But there's hardly any testing.
I mean, I think I ran 4 years in college about 10 years ago and I was never tested once. Now I wasn't really good enough to necessitate being tested, but yeah.
It's kind of weird. Like, yeah, you just allow, if I was them, I would test like everybody that scores at NCAAs, but even then you got to get out of competition. It's hard. Anyways, it's an interesting story to follow. We don't see a lot, but I do think that doping, you know, we had this Wesley Keating situation back when Electron was founded. Everyone thought he was on EPO at the University of Texas. We had Martin Fagan.
Was he an American?
He was at Texas and then he left because he was at UT. And then he left, I think, because they had suspicions and And I've talked to, we had Martin Fagan, who was a Providence runner, who dominant runner in Providence, didn't test positive there, but he tested positive later. I'd be shocked if he wasn't doping at Providence because he was so, so good. And then I talked to an NCAA, when this coach retires, I'd love to have them on the podcast. They've got so many stories, but I told John this a few weeks ago off here. I was like, I talked to a coach, he or she told me, yeah, I didn't run a runner one time at NCAAs. I just thought what they were doing in practice didn't make any sense. I thought they were an EPO. So it's out there. It's out there, folks. All right, don't cheat on your wife. Don't cheat on your taxes. And don't cheat on running. All right, folks, join the Supporters Club. Get your I'm the Pacemaker t-shirt today before it's too late. Watchrun.com/subscribe. Supporters Club members, we love you. Hopefully Weldon will be back on the pod on Tuesday. Anything this weekend, John? There's no meets, right?
Labor Day. Enjoy the weekend, everyone. Enjoy Brighton against Arsenal tomorrow morning, 7:30 a.m. And then next week, we've got NFL football. We're less than a week away from Ravens-Chiefs NFL opening night, Robert. I mean, that's the same day as the Zurich Diamond League next week. So fortunately, they don't overlap, but that's a big day for you. You've got Jakob against Cole Harker, Kerr, and Ingebrigtsen. Kerr and Goose in the afternoon. And then you've got Mahomes against Lamar as the nightcap.
Wow. Could be really good or really bad for me. We shall see. I had something brilliant to say, but I've forgotten it. All right, folks. Stay safe. Drug free.